Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is John Weir, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. I am Catherine Whittaker, returned from my podcast hiatus. I'm joined by David Law, but more importantly, the dulcet tones you heard in our intro there were those of Mr. John Weir, who very touchingly bought his wife Leah a guest editorship as part of our Kickstarter campaign for her birthday. It was a surprise for quite a long time, but it is now no longer a surprise. Leah is very much aware of the great, great honour that has been bestowed on her by her lovely husband, John, who incidentally gives me the opportunity to mention our podcast prediction standings, because
no,
John lies in a very respectable joint seventh after one Grand Slam event of the year with 1,119 points. I'm scrolling, bear with me while I scroll to find where David Law is. I'm still scrolling.
All
right. Scrolling. 19th. 19th out of 26, and I'll just have to scroll back the other way. Incidentally, Wayne Ferreira, 22.
So I'm ahead of someone.
I'll have to do a lot of scrolling back in the opposite direction, David, to find. Oh, who's that? Who's that at the top there? Is that Catherine Whittaker? Goodness me.
Yeah, welcome
I'm
back.
I'm glad I came back to this podcast.
So am I. I don't recognise you without a massive, great, big puffer jacket and a furry hat on.
I don't recognise myself anymore, David. I don't know what I've become other than that I've aged about 15 years in the time since I was last on this podcast.
Or how
last live on the podcast. Goodness, so many people have asked me in the last week, how was the Olympics? And I just don't have a pithy answer for it. I feel like saying, well, how long have you got? You know, have you got an hour for me to describe every single emotion that I experienced during that time?
I've got 28 seconds.
It was sort of the most challenging thing I've ever done. Wonderful in many ways, but I'm quite glad it's over. I'm quite glad it's over and that I'm home. It was incredibly challenging and amazing, but it's nice to be home.
I enjoyed the dress code change from Australia when you were in Sydney, leaving at 30 plus degrees Celsius and landing to minus 25. Particularly enjoyed that.
Minus 25. I have officially done broadcasting in minus 25 degrees, David. I'll never be the same again.
You didn't look too happy about that bit.
Hey, I did when I was on air.
She did a splendid job, everybody. Let's just say that.
And now I know all about the doubles luge, so Mary Carrillo and I can talk away about the doubles luge to our heart's content.
Still don't understand what is going on.
It's one bloke or woman lying on top of another bloke or woman. Always bloke and woman and woman. And if you've ever seen doubles luge, you'll understand why. While they hurtle down an icy hill on a tea tray together.
I see. Right. I won't try that. I don't know
how they decide who has to be the underneath one. That is really the short straw. It's like being the back end of a pantomime donkey.
Is there a height limit on the doubles luge or any luge?
I don't think there's a limit. Would be sort of human rights wise legal for them to place a limit on it. Sliding athletes tend to be quite tall.
Where would you put Ivo Karlovic on a tray, though? I mean, would you have to get like an extra big tray?
I believe there are standardisations on tray size.
Right.
So I'm not sure he could secure himself as sort of... he'd be on like a stretcher, wouldn't he?
Right. Okay. There we are.
I'd pop him underneath, though.
Yeah.
If, you know, if we're deciding who's top and bottom.
A bit like one
bottom
of those
bunk for Evo.
A bit like one of those sort of multi-tiered wedding cakes where you have to have the big
Evo,
one at the bottom.
I'm sure he's used to being on the bottom bunk.
Right. Okay.
Right then, tennis though. I've been dying to talk about tennis for a month now, and somehow we've ended up talking about the doubles luge, and it's all my fault. But we are back, David, reunited at the Putney Exchange to talk about tennis.
Hooray!
I'm very sorry for my absence. David did a sterling job of keeping you all informed about the tennis world while I was gone. We hope you enjoyed our couple of Q&A shows, more of those coming, but we have actual live tennis news and results to talk about. Thank you, Tennis World, for providing material for my first podcast back, not least the ITF for dropping their big, big bombshell of proposed Davis Cup changes as they did last week, and for the tennis world with responding to them with such strength of emotion. I mean, I knew that Davis Cup provoked strength of emotion, but I've been taken aback. I really have been taken aback by the strength of responses, and we'll come on to those very much so in due course. But just to bring you up to date, because it's pretty complex, isn't it? Because it involves Gerard Piqué, the footballer. When it all first came out, I thought, is there another Gerard Piqué? Is there a Gerard Piqué in tennis? Or is this the very same Gerard Piqué, Mr. Shakira Gerard Piqué? And it turns out it is the one and same
Barcelona defender.
Barcelona defender Gerard Piqué, who is ploughing, or his company is ploughing some billions into...
3 billion.
3 billion. I had heard 2.6, but I think once you're into the billions, the matter of... 400 million is mere change.
I quite like exaggerating anyway, as you know.
So he has ploughed 3 billion, let's call the whole thing off, 3 billion into a collaboration with the ITF and the proposal of the World Cup of Tennis, a 16-team single location tournament played over 10 days as a replacement to the Davis Cup, as a substitute to the Davis Cup. He has a whole lot of support. He is going to be meeting with all sorts of people, Chris Kermode, to discuss the proposals. And, Andy Murray supports him. Novak Djokovic supports him, although has made clear that he's not in business with Gerard Piqué, because I think there was some suggestion that Djokovic had some sort of investment or stake in the whole thing, and he's very much denied that. Nadal has supported it. Federer has said nothing because he's very diplomatic. I wonder whether he'll be able to hold out from saying anything in Indian Wells. Traditionally, Federer is quite good at holding out, saying anything. It's quite something, isn't it? And we understand it. I mean, it has to be voted on by the board later in the year at the official AGM, but we understand that it is endorsed by the ITF board members.
Yes, although they would need all the federations that make up that vote to vote two-thirds in favour of it in order for it to go through. And that's what they tried to do last year with a number of changes, such as three-set Davis Cup rubbers and one or two other changes as well, and they fell just short and it didn't happen. So it's still very much in the balance in that regard. You mentioned Chris Kermode there. Gerard Piqué initially met with Chris, we understand, and this was one of the proposals being put forward for a potential World Team Cup on the ATP side, and it does appear that Piqué has basically taken his money, his funds, his support, his ideas, and met with the ITF about the Davis Cup. And there's somebody in this room who really doesn't like the idea.
He said there was strength of
feeling. Gerard Piqué doesn't like that little chap over there just behind me. Not happy at all. Getting his views in very early. And fact is that the Davis Cup is where he's gone with his proposal. They have certainly said, yeah, we like that idea, let's do it. And they immediately stuck out a press release to say so. And that was the interesting thing for me, is that that dropped and it read as though this is something we're going to do.
It did.
And it's just subject to it being voted through. And when you then started to drill down to the detail and get some of the reaction and hear from the federations, there's a significant number of people that are against this. And this is no stroll to this happening whatsoever. This is going to be very close, I think.
It sounds like he did a kind of Dragon's Den type thing, Gerard Piquet, except that he didn't need money. He needed, you know, expertise and the gravitas of a governing body. You know, he shopped his idea around. He said, I've got 3 billion. I've got the idea. Who wants it? Who wants to fight for me? And the ITF and David Haggerty, saith I. Very strongly I. There are lots of people that saith nay, though.
Well, what was interesting was, and I'll hold my hands up here, when I read the press release, I was sitting in a place not dissimilar to where we're talking right now, with lots of children around and lots of activity, including my two own children, who were, let's just say, making life difficult for me to concentrate on the contents of this press release. But I still read it, and I was, I would say, in hindsight, perhaps a little too hasty to immediately say on Twitter that I thought that this sounded like a great idea, because it sounded so similar to what was our conclusion to the Laver Cup show that we did coming out of that, which is, let's make the Davis Cup a bit more like this, have it in a single place, have a big celebration, have all of the eyes of the world on it at the same time, and make it the fifth slam. That's what it sounded like to me on the release, and I would still stand by quite a large portion of that, because I do think it's a great idea. I do think there is a problem with Davis Cup as it currently is. I tell you what, I don't think I've ever received such an immediate groundswell of opposition on Twitter to anything that I've said over the last 10 years as that. There were dozens of people who just said, what are you talking about? You're going to ruin Davis Cup. There's so many of us tennis fans who cannot go to one place in the world for this team competition. We love the home and away aspect of it. We love being able to support our team in Great Britain's case, in Glasgow, for instance. I don't get to see tennis affordably. This is my chance. Nothing in tennis is like the Davis Cup. Why would you ruin it that way? I tell you, there were so many people who felt like that. And whilst, I mean, I do lament that if the home and away element is gone forever, tennis will lose something unique, something special, because there's nothing like it in the sport. Absolutely nothing. And we've talked about the doubles rubber and how special it is and how exciting it is and how, I think Mike Dixon said some of the best moments in his 25 years of covering tennis have been Davis Cup ties. That doesn't take away from the fact that there is something problematic with that system. The fact that so many top players feel that they, once they've won it, are not going to bother trying to win it again because it's too much hassle. One of the people I spoke to a couple of days ago is Marin Cilic. Had quite a long interview with him. It's one we're going to make into a separate tennis podcast in the next couple of days, because we haven't really got time to play it all here. But the gist is that he was supportive of this new idea and pretty vociferous about it as well. The fact is, on a local level, Davis Cup works. It's exciting in those two countries. It's great to be in the stadium. But the rest of the world is not taking any notice of it. And that is a massive problem. It's occupying 4 weeks during the year. And if you win it, you're playing it again, 6 weeks later? I mean, it's a problem. It doesn't work. It doesn't get the sort of eyeballs on it that it should. It's not the fifth slam. And that's what it needs to be. So I don't quite know how you get the best of both worlds, but obviously, in an ideal world, that's what you'd be trying to do.
Of course, but the fact is, you can't have everything, and you cannot have your cake and eat it. And for some people, the loss of that, the home and away aspect of it, is too price a high to pay, no matter what. And as you say, you've cited Mike Dixon. You know, I share his feeling. I was there recording the atmosphere at the final, and it's, as I kept on saying, you know, it's like nothing else I've ever experienced. But there's going to be a price on reform. I think reform is necessary. And if that's the price, so be it. I'm not necessarily saying every aspect of what's being proposed is the right thing to do. I'm sure changes will be being made around the edges. I think it's fantastic that there's someone you know, an organisation can be, people want to invest in both time, energy and money into the Davis Cup and into keeping it relevant. I think that's great. I think it's desperately sad that the Fed Cup is being completely ignored in all of this.
Yeah.
It's a point that Anki Othavong has made, plenty of others as well, still not enough people. I mean, it seems to me so obvious to make it a joint Fed and Davis Cup venture. But as is so often the case, and I'm sure economic reasons may or may not be cited if the question is ever posed to the right people, and you know how I feel about that argument, but the Fed Cup, which ironically is in more desperate need of reform, in my belief, in terms of its structure and its organisation, is just being completely left out in the cold in all of this. The, you know, the final bullet point of the proposed changes is a review of Junior Davis Cup and Fed Cup, including potential benefits of introducing new age group events. I mean, that's pretty pathetic for me in terms of neglect of the Fed Cup. But, you know, maybe there's only time and energy for, you know, pick your battles one at a time. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt for the moment and hope that, you know, Fed Cup reform is coming. You mentioned Marin Cilic. There's plenty of other responses just as strong as his. I mean, you have Yannick Noah, who just, I mean, pretty emotive words from him on Twitter in French, but obviously translated widely. What a sadness. This is the death of the Davis Cup. He said, Yevgeny Kafelnikov, agrees. He said, we both dedicated ourselves for this not to happen. That's something he said. Yannick, no, he said, they've sold the soul of a historic competition. Sorry, Mr. Davis, is what Yannick Noah says. The Belgian Federation have said resolutely and unequivocally that they will vote against, which is very interesting. You know, a lot can change. I'm sure there'll be a lot of lobbying in the next few months. It's several months away, that vote, but for them to be coming out and saying that, you know, not just sharp and take a breath, and to say absolutely, definitely we'll vote against is pretty strong. I mentioned Anki Othavong's reaction. I'd like more to reflect that, but we'll see. Andy Roddick is in favour. That's interesting. He always takes the time to look at the detail of these things, doesn't he? So it's my understanding that there's still a bit of process as far as getting votes to confirm this later this year. I think it's necessary and inevitable for the survival of the Davis Cup.
And
good news.
That is pretty typical across the board from the American players and the captain, Jim Courier. I've heard him say that before. I've heard Patrick McEnroe. Even, you know, you're going back 10 years. I remember speaking to him in Indian Wells 10 years ago and him saying exactly this. This is the sort of competition we need. And this is a team, this is a country like Australia that are fully invested in the Davis Cup. They're always available whenever it comes around. So it's a difficult one to get any sort of unanimity on. People have differing views. I mean, and just to give you an example of some of the views that I was getting on Facebook, Dawn Moat says, Tennis Podcast Facebook, she says, Davis Cup is a unique and wonderful experience for players and fans alike. Changing it so drastically will ruin it, and it won't attract the big players at the end of the season due to injury or exhaustion. What about Paris in 2017, anyone? She says, I fear this will kill off the event completely. Why aren't we just making it a biannual event and reinstating ranking points?
Well, injury and exhaustion, I believe, is a separate issue affecting tennis across the board that needs to be addressed. That is not a Davis Cup-specific issue. It afflicted the Tour Finals, it afflicted Paris this year, and it seems to be worsening. So that needs addressing, but I think that's a separate issue to Davis Cup. Personally, my feeling would be biannual would be ideal. The closer you can get to the Ryder Cup model, frankly, the better. Because as we said in our Laver Cup episode, that's the dream in terms of turning an individual sport into a team sport. But it's more than a team sport, isn't it? Because anyway,
that's one of the interesting things as well. Is from the release, it seemed as though they're not going to ditch the name Davis Cup altogether, but they're going to replace the actual name of the thing to the World Team Tennis Finals.
The World PK Cup.
But, I mean, you know, it's not going to be the Davis Cup. You're going to crown Davis Cup champions, they say. But that doesn't feel right to me.
I agree. That's baby in bathwater.
Yeah.
for me. I mean, I guess it's a minor thing what it's going to be called, but you know, the Davis Cup as a brand still has great value for me. And they, you know, their slogan is the World Cup of Tennis already, so that it works. And yeah, I feel like the brand, the cup itself, has such value as an iconic icon. The sport still represents and means something. So to do away with that, I not just a shame sentimentally, but I think it would be shooting themselves in the foot. There's time for things like that, for the finessing around the edges.
Well, there's time
for that to change.
I wonder whether, in a way, the ITF has said, right, we're doing this to just... I mean, look at how it's concentrated everybody's attention. Now nobody can get away from the fact that something is going to have to change. How much is the question? And I wonder whether the lobbying that you reference will be to ultimately come to some sort of compromise whereby they say, right, well, we're going to do this and that, but we're not going to do all those other things. Maybe they will keep a first round so that you have home and away in order to get to a finals in November. Maybe the idea that Simon Briggs reported in the Telegraph of staging this in Singapore, which was mooted in his article as something that he thinks that they are considering, which you can understand given that the WTA finals is moving away from Singapore, that would be a massive problem as far as I'm concerned, because it's there is the hotbed, the heartbeat of the Davis Cup in so many ways is in Europe. America, as I've mentioned, is hugely passionate, as is Australia. I know you can't be close to everywhere if you hold an event like this, but Singapore, I'm sorry, I just can't see the sort of passion being replicated.
It's certainly not the place to if you're going to make changes this sweeping and this swathing and drastic, you need to give it every chance of being successful. And it sounds like the sort of thing, you know, that if it builds and builds and tennis in Asia builds and builds in the way that people are hoping and projecting, fine, it might one day survive and thrive in Singapore, but it's damaging its chances of doing so to put it in Singapore at this stage for me. And I know, you know, the dollar signs are appealing, you know, I'm sure if they're being dangled in front of my nose, I'd find it,
well, they've
find
got
it
to
difficult
make this work,
to turn them down, but
Catherine,
it would be short-sighted and short-termist, I think, to look at it like that and just give it every chance of succeeding.
They've got to find a way for this investment to happen, this change to happen, but in a way that people can stomach, in a way that doesn't completely lose what is great about Davis Cup. They've got to be able to maintain enough of it, and I would hope that that's possible. Do you want to know what Paul Vault says?
If I wanted to know, I would have asked. But
so the good, I asked four options as to whether what you think of.
He started doing pole vaults about West Brom now.
Yeah, but I don't do those on the official Tennis Podcast channel.
No,
I can
you
if
don't.
You like.
No, you don't. But the official podcast channel is not enough to contain your insatiable appetite for pole vaults. You're now having to do them about West Brom's relegation situation, which isn't even up for debate, really, is it?
It's still time, Catherine. Nine games left.
It's not really a broad range of views about whether or not West Brom are going to get relegated. Yeah, but the Tennis Podcast account cannot contain your appetite for pole vaults.
It's, well, if you're going to go away for 4 weeks, what am I supposed to do? You know, I have nobody
to
talk
control,
to
apparently.
About tennis, so I had to do that. Anyway, 26% love the idea of these new changes. 32% hate them. 27% have said, we'll get back to you. 15% have said they don't care. So there you are.
Great. What is the point in voting in a poll vote to say, we'll get back to you? I don't have an opinion yet. Well, I'd like to cast my opinion to say, I don't have an opinion yet. Goodness me, let's move on. Okay. I'm sure... I am broadly in favour, not because I think everything about it is brilliant, not because there aren't things that make me sad that we'll lose, but I think reform is necessary.
I haven't got a broadly in favour option.
Yeah, and therein lies the issue with pole vault. It's complete insensitivity, or one of the issues with pole vault, is complete insensitivity to nuance, which is at the heart of every good debate.
Apart from that, she loves
broadly
it.
Broadly in favour. How about you?
Yeah, the same.
Broadly in favour,
I need to redo the pole vault, don't I?
We're going to move on. We'll obviously come back to it. This isn't going away.
No.
Especially not with Indian Wells coming up. And it's going to be very interesting to see whether Federer does say anything, because he's obviously, his company is invested in the Laver Cup.
Yes.
And this would obviously become much more of a rival to the Laver Cup than the Davis Cup currently is. I mean, in terms of format, it's pretty like for like what's being proposed. So,
although it is 18 teams over the 10-day period.
I mean, it's not the same, but it would... I doubt whether they could both occupy the same space successfully. So it's going to be very interesting.
Mm. And don't forget, Marin Cilic's view coming your way at Tennis Podcast Extra. I spoke to him about other stuff as well, including how he coped and how he recovered from that Wimbledon final defeat. Coming your way.
I still can't think about that. I'm glad he's all right about it. But
he seems better with it than you.
It still haunts me.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
In terms of tennis that's been happening this week, David, Juan Martín Del Potro is back in the top 10.
I know.
Back in the top 10. He's won the biggest title since his comeback in Acapulco, 6-4, 6-4 over Kevin Anderson in the final.
And that scoreline tells you something, doesn't it? I mean, Kevin Anderson doesn't give matches away. Del Potro, he has played well to get that title. And
beaten Zverev.
Yeah.
Yeah, and interesting stuff... I saw on Twitter this week about how much of a smarter player he's become since he's had to make those changes to his backhand, how much more he was choosing to slice against Zverev because he's had to improve that slice backhand so much. He was slicing the backhand more than 80% of the time against Zverev, but then completely adapted that tactic and was hitting over the backhand far more in most of his other matches, including the final, I think. But he's trying to use it as a string to his bow rather than as this horrible affliction that's happened to him, which is great.
Yes, it is great. And did you see what Alexander Zverev had to say about Juan Carlos Ferrero?
I sure did.
His now former coach.
I sure did. Well, he said that he cast some aspersions on his team members and he had to go.
Yeah, he said some...
Disrespectful, I think is the word. Yeah.
To all members of my team. And so,
and what Ferrero's response is that he questioned his professionalism and that he was consistently showing up late to practice and he questioned that and he stands by how he behaved. So... the point you made on social media, David, was, you know, it's good to have somebody speak out and, you know, explain the reasons behind a pretty interesting decision and not just say, you know, we're consciously uncoupling or whatever it is that
that's what
most
Gwyneth
people
Paltrow
say. Yeah, exactly.
Did,
but,
it?
You know, everything's so damn amicable, isn't it? when we know things aren't amicable.
No, somebody's annoyed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, somebody's annoyed. Tell us about how annoyed you are. So I sort of like that. And I don't know what to make of anything. I suspect it's sort of six of one and a half dozen of the other. It's interesting that questions are being raised, valid or not, about Zverev's professionalism and commitment, because I've only ever heard positives about that, you know, how ruthlessly committed he is to becoming world number one, you know, almost too tunnel visioned about it, and too keen for it all to happen too quickly. So I find that interesting. I don't know how much to read into it, because it's he said, she said. But
and the other thing that is hard to fathom as well is anybody who's ever met Juan Carlos Ferreira will tell you what a lovely fella he is,
yeah,
and how softly spoken and understated he is. Now, not to say that he's not ruthless in his own way. You don't win French Open titles and get to world number one without having that in you. At the same time, you know, I would imagine, let's look at recent results. He came up short, Zverev, in the big events. And really, that's what Ferreira was brought on in order to influence.
Yeah,
and
generally speaking, that is the role of super coaches, isn't it? Yeah.
And either, I would guess, that Zverev hasn't listened right or hasn't done the right things, or he has just looked across and he said, well, this guy's not bringing me anything because I haven't got over the line. It's his fault. So it's a little bit of a blame game, really, isn't it?
It's another super coach off the books, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Hey, Juan Carlos.
The trend is dying.
I've got a vacancy.
Fabio Fognini won the title down in Rio, defeated 22-year-old Nicolas Jarry.
Yeah, never heard of
Jarry
him.
Jarry doesn't sound right, does it? Nicolas Jarry. 1-6, 6-1, 6-4 in the final. Sorry, Fabio, but the biggest story out of Rio this week was the Bulldogs are back. That's ball, B-A-L-L, not bulldogs, although bulldogs are great too. The video has been shared widely. Dogs collecting tennis balls, marvellous, should happen everywhere. Roberto Bautista Agut has won his second title of the year in Dubai, and the biggest title of his career, defeated Luca Puy 6-3, 6-4 in the final. He's incrementally inching towards the top 10, David.
Yeah, well, he needed something to get him back out on the court, I think, after the Davis Cup defeat he had against Cameron Norrie. And actually, it just shows something I was talking to Charlie Eccleshare about, how consistent and reliable Bautista Agut is on the sort of run-of-the-mill ATP circuit. You put your house on him to always meet his ranking in terms of where he gets to in a tournament. But in that Davis Cup spotlight, he suffered. Happens quite a bit.
And to round up our whirlwind of results, Lisa Shurenko, the very much rarely talked about Ukrainian tennis player, defended her Acapulco title. She defeated Stephanie Vergula in the final.
And also there. Heather Watson won in the doubles there.
And Jamie Murray won in the doubles,
yes,
there.
Yes, his 20th doubles title alongside Bruno Suarez. Not together all 20, but yes, he's won his 20th title and his 350th match overall.
Marvellous. And Heather Watson teamed with somebody interesting, didn't she? Tatiana Maria, yes. Never afraid of controversy, Tatiana Maria. So that was the week that was in tennis.
What was she done controversial?
She had the match against Elise Cornet at the French Open a couple of years ago, where she flat out accused Cornet of cheating afterwards.
Oh, really?
For calling the trainer on.
Oh.
For calling the trainer on for cramp, and claiming it wasn't cramp when she had already said, I've got cramp. And she talked about lawyers at the time, but I don't think lawyers ever happened.
Right.
But anyway, it was agrotastic, David. You would have loved it. I can't believe you missed it.
Catherine talked about lawyers when I claimed that it was out when it was actually in.
which you really did do, and it was match point.
She ended up winning for a second time.
So that was the week that was in terms of results. There's no shortage of other news and talking points, though. We're not going to linger on all of these, David, but press the buzzer if you want to stop and chat.
Where's
about any of these subjects.
This
I suspect you will
shop
about the first
one. Coffee shop has no buzzer,
one.
I can see.
You'll have to devise a makeshift buzzer. Nadal is out of Indian Wells and Miami with a lingering right hip injury, the same right hip injury that caused his retirement against Cilic in Melbourne. We're not going to see him now till the clay.
No.
It's a worry, isn't it?
Well, it is when you look at the list of tournaments that he has missed, because it dates back really to the US Open victory of last year. You know, he played one or two after that, but, you know, he missed out at the O2, of course, had that injury, came back, looked, I thought, pretty good in Australia for a while, and then he pulled whatever muscle he pulled, and that obviously must be a more serious injury than we thought, because it's the same thing that this flared up again here. He was ready to go in Acapulco. He went all the way there, pulled it in the match or the practice session against Adrian Mannarino, and yeah, he's out for a bit. And we talked about it in our questions podcast of last week about whether he might be better served skipping this time of year and getting fully prepared for the clay. Well, he didn't have this in mind. We were talking about whether he might do that voluntarily. And at the same time, if he can fully convalesce, rehab, come out firing, I mean, imagine if he's absolutely fresh on the clay.
Like a caged bull. Yeah.
Could go either way, couldn't it?
Yeah, well, the problem is he loves to play tennis, Nadal, and he needs to play tennis. He doesn't do so well when he comes into events without the backup of matches behind him. So he needs to be feeling good and ready early on. He needs to come into the season feeling good. He's going to want to play himself in.
The thing with that, though, Catherine, is Nadal is older now, and I'm not sure that he can get away with this business of just playing week after week and loving the intensity of matches and relying on that for rhythm and that for success. I think he's going to have to rein it in a bit. He's going to have to play less. He's going to have to do more like what Federer's been doing. I think the fact that he is not playing Indian Wells Miami ultimately might give him the best chance of winning big again at the French Open and Wimbledon. I think his body is probably telling him something now.
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't feel that way right now. I mean, Nadal loves to play tennis, doesn't he? He loves to get matches. He's probably like a caged animal. Good luck to his nearest and dearest trying to cope with a Rafael Nadal that's being prevented from playing tennis by circumstance. But, you know, Roger Federer's pre-Australian Open 2017 layoff, that 6 month, the biggest chunk, that was enforced, and it was the best thing that could possibly have happened to him. I know the French Open, the missing out the clay, that was an elective layoff, but he learnt about the benefits of extended layoffs from the enforced layoff. So it could be. I mean, we don't know. We don't know. Some of the unknowns in tennis are men's tennis in particular are really exciting, and, you know, for a podcast that loves to speculate, it's great. But there's just so many, aren't there? I mean, he's not the only one out of Indian Wells. It's a long list. Goffin, poor Goffin, hitting the eye.
I mean, that guy. It was the French Open, wasn't it, last year that he fell over the tarpaulin at the back of the court and put him out for months.
I think he needs to get in the gym. And just
can't
weigh
more. Your eye up.
I just don't like that he weighs less than me. Eat some pies, David. Eat some pies, and I'll eat fewer pies, and we'll see where we are in a few months. he's out of Indian Wells, and he's also pulled out of Belgium's forthcoming Davis Cup tie because he anticipates needing to go home and see a doctor after Miami. Which is a little bit odd.
There's also that is just another reason why the current format is a problem.
Yeah,
you can be playing a series of tournaments and you're about to change services, and then suddenly maybe you've got another surface change in the middle of it all for Davis Cup, and it's problematic.
Yeah, who else is missing? Songa, Wawrinka, Murray, obviously the usuals. Gasquet. Yeah,
it's a shame, but it's also a massive opportunity for somebody to go on a Kyle Edmund type run, win a big first round match, draw opens up, and who knows, could have a new name to deal with.
Big opportunity for Del Potro as well, coming in to Indian Wells off the back of a win in Acapulco. Confidence game at an all-time high since his comeback, or his latest comeback. Huge opportunity for him, top 10 player.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder where it's going to end up for Juan Martín Del Potro in many ways, don't you? Because he is he's got the pedigree.
Yeah.
He seems fresh. When we talk about opportunities, Juan Martín Del Potro, could he win a slam this year?
Of course. I think we're in anything's possible territory for this year. I think he absolutely could, yeah. He could win the US Open.
Somebody said the other day...
It's hard to see him winning the French because of what's required physically, Wimbledon because it's grass, although he is an Olympic bronze medalist and
so
semi-finalist, but he could win the US Open.
So much of it feels to me about how fresh he is. And, I mean, somebody was saying, I think John Wertham on Twitter, if Nadal is injured, is Roger Federer the favourite for the French Open?
Roger Federer, who's probably less than 50-50 to even play the French Open. Yeah. He probably is. I mean, I'd love to see what happens to the odds. I guess we won't know. Yeah, there's not going to be... By the time we know about Nadal, we'll probably also know about Federer. So there's not going to be a period where that scenario could play out. But goodness me, there's a lot of unknowns the bottom line. What there aren't any unknowns about David is any longer what happened to, or who was responsible for what happened to Jeannie Bouchard at the US Open 2015, because a US civil court has found that the USTA was 75% liable for the injuries she sustained in a slip and fall in the changing rooms there after a mixed doubles match in the US Open 2015, and therefore they have been ordered to pay 75% of what the court determined her lost earnings as a result of that injury would be. Now, that settlement, that fee, that figure is undisclosed. But what we hear, David, is that it's probably pretty darn big.
The fact is, I've heard reports of figures speculating between $3 million and $30 million. 3-0. Now,
I've got to bring more lawsuits.
And those are very much...
Remember when I fell down the stairs at Queen's, David?
Yes, but that was your own fault. Those are very much speculative numbers. At the same time, one of them, John Wertheim, spoke to a number of sources, and he said that he feels, from what he's hearing, that it is at least what Flavia Panetta would have taken home from winning the title, more than that, and she would have won $3 million. As you said, it's a question of lost earnings, and that in itself is just a completely speculative figure, because who knows how well she would have done. I'm sure she would, and her people would have been arguing, well, you know, a year before she was a Grand Slam finalist and she'd reached two semi-finals of slams, and
lost earnings for that period on the basis of what she's done this year would be pitiful. We don't even know whether they brought endorsements into that. Presumably they did, although there were no endorsements that were we don't know.
But
certainly her endorsement income it dwarfs her playing income, because she's now ranked outside the world's top 100. She continues to get wild cards. She's got one into Indian Wells. And she tweeted one of the most stupid things I've ever seen someone tweet this week.
What was that?
After the lawsuit news, she tweeted, thanks to juror number five, for wishing me a happy birthday on your way out of the court. Love you. Heart you. I heart you. Was it love or
that's
heart?
Right, heart. And,
so the sentiment is...
Not the most sensible thing you can...
Not the most sensible.
Write to somebody on social media for the world's eyes to see when that person has just judged your... settlement figure,
in a criminal case in the UK, which I realise it was a civil case, not in the UK, so that is outside my realms of knowledge. In a criminal case in the UK, that would be grounds certainly to file a motion for a mistrial. Now, I believe that hasn't happened. As far as I know, she's got away with it, but goodness me, that's a silly thing to do.
Yes, I think brain was not put into gear particularly well at that point.
And it
moment.
Stayed up there for an hour. It took her people.
You would imagine somebody, because initially somebody said to her, what on earth are you doing? You know, and she said, well, she railed against whoever was criticising her and said, oh, that was something that was said in court. It's not me who's bringing it up. And as you say, within 20 minutes, the whole tweet had been deleted because somebody had clearly said to her, you know, you're asking for trouble.
What right do we there. Think about the wild card, the Indian Wells wild card, or the persistent wild cards that she received? Well, look, I realise she is a Grand Slam finalist. She's a multiple Grand Slam semi-finalist. She's a former top 10 player. But it's been a long time since she's been any of those things, anywhere near those things, or shown promise of getting back to being
and
near
look,
those
there
things.
There are other Grand Slam semi-finalists and finalists who have not had that degree of leeway when it comes to wild cards from tournaments over the years. She is getting that partly because of her celebrity status, the fact that she has an enormous social media following.
She gave Taylor Swift a wild card.
The fact that she is... She has been there and done it, so that is partially explaining that. But when does that run out, that goodwill, that ability to turn celebrity into invitations when you're ranked 116 in the world and just not winning tennis matches at all? I would have thought this can't go on for much longer.
Barack Obama, 80.1 million Twitter followers.
He likes tennis.
Yeah, he does like tennis. He'd get you some coverage.
Yep.
Yeah, so go for it. Something to think about. Ellen DeGeneres, 63.8 million.
Do you know what we'll do?
Britney Spears, 49.3. She played some tennis this week,
Las Vegas. This rematch we need to have, I think we might make it into a tournament and make it invitation only for the highest followed, most followed people in the world on Twitter.
Do you think Kim Kardashian West would attend? She's
yes.
got 49.3 million.
She'd be front row.
She needs to fill her days, doesn't she?
So I think I could beat her.
Fighting talk from David Law. Serena Williams hasn't been playing tennis this week, but she has announced a marvellous partnership with UNICEF off the back of her talking so candidly about what she went through in her pregnancy. You know, her saying, I nearly died as a result of the complications in during the birth of her daughter, the various blood clots and DVTs, and had she not had the access to the expensive top-level healthcare that she did have access to, she could well have died. So she has now made it one of her missions to ensure that mothers and newborn children of every level of income and advantage and disadvantage have access to a certain standard of pre- and postnatal healthcare, because that absolutely shouldn't be something that's a luxury, means-tested thing in life. So well done, Serena. Patrick Mouratoglou, her still coach, he's not been doing much coaching of her recently, but he's still her coach. He's been doing a lot of chatting, as always.
Oh, he loves a chat.
He loves a chat. He's been chatting to the WTA website this week, saying he thinks Serena will be, quote, back to her best by the French Open, which is a big claim, isn't it? Because Serena's best is the very, very best.
Yeah. And
it's the best there's ever been.
I question whether that is going to happen. I don't think that is going to happen. Now, people may listen to this and say, well, Roger Federer is the best male tennis player that's ever walked the earth, and he came out after 6 months off and won the Australian Open. But there's a very big difference in the way their games are constructed. I know that he has a similarly devil-may-care type of approach to the game, but he has a natural margin for error and safety to his ground strokes with all the topspin he puts on the ball that dips inside baselines. Serena doesn't have that. When it's on, it is unplayable. She is still the best tennis player on the planet if she plays her best tennis. It doesn't matter who she's against. But, you know, it's all about knocking the other person off the court.
The margin for error point is evidenced by how much she dislikes the wind, isn't it? Remember in Auckland last year, and she played that absolute horror show of a match, and just said, I'm never coming back to Auckland, it's too windy.
When her game is off, the error count is incredibly high. And so I'd be surprised with that type of game if she's able to just come out and immediately turn it on. I think it's going to take a bit of time.
Question for you, David. Have you ever considered taking out four billboards wherever you like to declare that your lovely wife Gorana is the greatest mama of all time?
Not so far.
And if not, why not?
Well, budgetary constraints are definitely part of that.
Part of it is finances the only thing holding you back? Because I reckon we can find a way, David. Another Kickstarter. Help David pay tribute to his wife's parenting skills.
The other thing holding
every
me
man
back,
should be able to do it.
The other thing holding me back is that if I did it, I think I would run from my wife because she would not like it at all.
What are we talking about? I hear you ask. This cannot be real. Alexis Ohanian, the devoted husband of Serena Williams, has paid for 4 billboards. Must be in Florida, where they live, I presume. It must be local to them.
I thought it was in California and Indian Wells.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, blimey.
Maybe it's not. I don't know.
You can't tell from the pictures where they are. Certainly in public. Can confirm they are in public. 4 of them bearing big pictures of both Serena and her fantastically cute daughter, Alexis. The first one bears the word greatest. Second, mama. Third, of all time. And the final one, Serena Williams, GMOAT, greatest mama of all time.
Oh, I think it's quite cute, to be honest.
Oh, it's adorable. It is bananas, but it is adorable.
Do you know, I think if you've got that much money and you've got Serena Williams as your wife and the mum of your kid, you probably feel like you need to go pretty big if you're going to impress her.
Oh, he's definitely gone big. Yeah.
I would imagine.
He's bold. Do you think it was a surprise? Because if not, that he's got to be confident that she's going to enjoy that as a gesture.
That would be where I would be drawing the line myself, because if I got that wrong, which I think I would if I did it. I'm not too sure.
I love the way
like
we're actually talking about a world in which David Law might take out some billboards to declare Gorner the GMOAT.
Which he is, but I'm still not sure that that's going to be my
move. Well, you can have it out with Alexis Ohanian.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm not arguing with her either.
Anyway, it's lovely. Completely harmless, lovely, sweet gesture. Love the sentiment. I do think it's completely bananas. But good luck to them in their bananasness. Celebrities quite often are bananas, aren't they? We don't live on the same planet as these people.
That's how they get where they are, isn't it?
Is it? By being bananas?
A bit. Yeah, you know, coming up with these amazing ideas.
No, I think you're
like
confusing chicken and egg there.
Reddit and all that, whatever it is.
Well, you're right. I mean, there is quite a strong argument that every sort of ridiculously high-achieving person has to be a bit bananas. And I think there is quite a lot in that.
And someone who's prepared to just go
see
big.
Oscar dresses circa any time, but yeah. Salma Hayek turned up dressed as a loo roll holder. That was strange. Gabini Muguruza played it safe in black. She was at the Oscars.
Yeah, she was.
As was Grigor Dimitrov, although not at the actual ceremony. He was at a pre-Oscars party.
Right.
I think maybe that might be an incentive for him to win a slam, that he gets invited to the main event.
I don't know how it works. I mean, that must be how it works. If she is there, it must be about slam winning.
Federer's been before.
Isn't it? Yeah, he's won a few.
I haven't seen Marin Cilic there. Lost in the post, his invite.
Maybe.
Do you think Peter Cord has been?
I haven't seen him. But then I haven't been there because I haven't won anything.
Peter Corder, have you been to the Oscars? Right.
How does it work? If anybody knows out there how you get an Oscars invite, we want to know.
What else have we got? We've got the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, which I'm not going to dwell on for very long because it doesn't deserve to be, because it's a complete tone-deaf irrelevance in 2018. And I was hoping to completely be cushioned and cosseted from its existence this year, what with being in Pyeongchang. But alas, I was still exposed to the horror of it. And look, it's nothing new, is it? Seeing Caroline Wozniacki naked on a beach.
She
sadly
wasn't in it this year, was she?
Wozniacki?
No, she wasn't in it this year. Jeannie Bouchard and Sloane Stephens.
Are you sure she wasn't in it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's something.
Or at least that wasn't on the tweets I saw.
Jeannie Bouchard naked on a beach then. I've seen someone naked on a beach.
Yeah, well, she definitely was. And Sloane Stephens was.
And, you know, it's
well
nothing new. What did make me choke a bit on whatever pretty ghastly food I was eating in the Olympics canteen was Sloane Stephens claiming that the whole experience was empowering. Now, she may have felt
empowered by it,
and that's nice for her, but it is not objectively empowering.
Not if she thinks
and
it
she is.
And
she is disempowering other women. by she is, but I don't hold her responsible. I hold the people that produced the whole thing responsible. But the whole thing, she might feel personally empowered, but the existence of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, a professional athlete being pictured naked on a beach for the benefit of the almost entirely male readership, is disempowering for women. Fact. Sam Crowe's engaged, David. The sound you're hearing is those of hearts breaking the world over.
Go on, Sam. Sam is getting married. And is he married already? Or is he just getting married?
He's getting married.
He's getting married.
He's getting married, yeah.
The reason we sort of take a sharp intake of breath is because it has been a largely chronicled journey,
it's been
it?
A very public plight to find plight, a lady yeah. friend willing to spend her life with him. He failed.
What was that show that he was on?
He failed to find the love of his life via Millionaire Matchmaker. Shock horror. Who'd have thought that a TV dating show wasn't the way to find your betrothed?
Yeah. Mark Philippoussis tried something
Age
like that.
Age of Love, yeah. Age of Love,
and he's happily married with a lovely child, and
yeah.
not the person that he met on that show.
Not the not the woman that he ended up taking him to meet his mum on that show. I believe he actually had to take home both an older and a younger lady to meet his mum on
Wasn't
the final episode.
Called a cougar or something.
Not her in particular, but an older lady. Right. In a romantic forum can be referred to as a cougar.
Oh.
I don't know what the word for it for a younger lady is, a reverse cougar. Anyway, Mark Philippoussis was presented with a bevy of younger women, bevy of older women, had to narrow it down to one of each, you know, chicken or fish on the plane, and took both of them home to meet his mum. She informed his decision. He picked one, can't remember which one. Don't think she hung around for long. Now he's married to someone else and the rest is history.
And he's very happy. And he's a lovely bloke, is Mark.
He's a lovely bloke.
Delighted.
And never has anyone been more happy to be a father than Mark Philippoussis. His son is an absolute bruiser, though. I think he was in sort of size 5 clothing when he was 2. Age 5 clothing.
Good lad.
Yeah, coming to a tennis tour near you soon. Roger Federer and Serena Williams won awards at the Laureus Sports Awards last night. That's nothing new. They both won before. Federer now the most decorated Laureus Awards winner of all time. He won 2 last night. One was the comeback of the year. The other one, like elderly sports person of the year, something like that. Something... The Federer, you're great, and everyone's
and
told
old.
You that a million times already today. Yeah, Federer, you're old and great award. And the ATP are reporting on their website that the Laureus website crashed at exactly the moment Federer received his awards. Therefore, Federer was responsible for that, and he's sort of broken the internet. Well, that's a very specific corner of the internet.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because usually if you bring a website down, you're usually in some sort of trouble, aren't you? For pressing
Federer's
the wrong buttons.
Federer's never in trouble.
You know, but... Caw. Yeah, he's loving that.
And Kyle Edmund is loving life as the new British number one. The new world number 24, career high ranking, but the new British number one, usurping Andy Murray, who reigned supreme for 12 years. 12
yeah.
years. He's not
it's
even
long,
that old.
Time. It's a long time. He's what is he, 30 years old, Andy Murray. And, it shows how consistent he's been, how shallow the field behind him has been over that period of time, that nobody's managed to catch him up and overtaken him. And, look, we have to say that one of the main reasons that Kyle Edmund has overtaken him is because Andy Murray is injured and has been out of the game for most of the last year. That having been said... It's another indication of how well Edmund has done to get into the mid-20s, 24 in the world. It's about what I thought his career high would end up being a year ago. So he's already done that. He's obviously going to go higher, I think, now. I didn't think he would ever get to a Grand Slam semi. I was proven wrong. And now I think the sights shift quite considerably. I think he can look at the future... And I think if he's sensible, he'll not look too hard at it. He's got to just keep doing what he's been doing, frankly. But I feel that he is capable in this era where there's a lot of instability of making more Grand Slam semis, certainly at the French Open.
Yeah, his favourite slam. Yeah. His favourite slam. And you use the comparison with Jim Courier, don't you? Similar game. Yeah. Yes, the sport's changed, but, you know, a couple of French Open titles for Courier. That's the model he's got to be working on. I'm not predicting two Kyle Edmund French Open titles, but... That's the sort of game and set of results that can give Carl Edmund belief, yeah. I think. He's going to be travelling to the French Open in some style, isn't he?
He is. He's got a new deal. That's what these players do when they get into the top 20s in the world. They get a deal. And this one's with British Airways, so he's going to be an ambassador for British Airways.
Which I have to say I saw coming, because I saw upon his return home, his big homecoming after that extraordinary run to the semi-finals in Melbourne, I saw a big picture of him on Twitter, flanked by being welcomed home by British Airways, flanked by some stewardesses, everyone looking delighted. And I thought... there's a deal to be done here.
He's perfect, isn't he? And, I mean, he's got a pretty switched-on team around him. Lawrence Frankopan is his agent. I had a chat with him in Australia. He had a very clear idea of how Kyle Edmund needs to be partnered by brands over the years to come and things that fit his personality, and I think that's really key for somebody like Kyle Edmund. It's very easy to sign up to whoever's offering the most money and getting them to do things that they feel thoroughly uncomfortable with. They won't do that with Kyle Edmund, and I think that's for the better.
It's a safe pair of hands on both sides, yeah. Isn't it? You know what you're getting with BA, you know what you're getting with Kyle Edmund. He's not anything other than what he is. He doesn't pretend to be anything, and he's not going to get caught in any...
scrapes.
Scandals, is he?
No, don't think so.
Which is a very unintended but excellent segue into my last item, which is about Dan Evans, who has been sort of cautiously welcomed back-ish into the LTA fold. They've said, of course, that they condemn any form of doping, but they say that Dan, of course, is 11 months into a one-year ban for testing positive for cocaine last year. They say he's shown genuine commitment to getting his tennis career back on track. That ban expires on the 24th of April, incidentally. They say that he's reflected on his experience and would like to support the LTA's anti-doping education program. Great. They say they've offered him a structured program in sports science and medicine. And that their support will be entirely dependent on non-negotiable commitment to ongoing monitoring. Those are the official words. What Russell Fuller of the BBC is reporting is that at the end of last year, he was perhaps not in the best shape mentally and physically, so he's giving himself a time limit for getting back into shape. I can only assume 4 months is enough. It sounds like a tight schedule to me. But maybe he needs. Maybe he's a sort of guy. People are different, aren't they? Some people need deadlines to kick themselves into gear. So maybe he's that kind of guy. I hope it's enough time.
I always thought that would be a problem. Is what do you do to fill the time? And can you just keep on training if you don't have an obvious reason to train and an end game to it? And whilst I think he's a naturally fit guy, he's an athlete. I think the stability of the body is a big question mark, the core and all that sort of thing. The injury prevention, is he going to be able to go straight back into it at the intensity you need to play the sport? I mean, you know, he's going to be playing some pretty small events, but that doesn't mean against rubbish tennis players. I was at that final in Shrewsbury in the Futures where you've got players ranked in the 400s and they were just belting the ball at each other. They were flying all over the court. There was so much adrenaline and intensity out there. It is not that different. It's a different level of ability, but goodness me, he's got a long road ahead as Dan. He can do it. He's good enough, but it's a long road ahead.
And he likes his time in Solihull, does Dan? Who wouldn't?
Oh, well, there you go.
We believe he's training at the Edgbaston Priory, which is where they hold the WTA event. Very perfectly good facility, but he is going to struggle if he wants to train up there to find the level of opponent necessary to get himself in the sort of match fitness. So it'll be interesting to see whether he... does take up the offer of training at the National Tennis Centre. Russell Fuller, a BBC Tennis correspondent, reports that he understands that Dan could have had the opportunity to train with Andy Murray for part of December had he shown greater interest. Well, he's obviously, you know, done that New Year thing of going, right, New Year, it's January, you know, now's the time.
Yes, we've got experience. And
we all do that.
New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. Start playing some tennis again. Yes.
Get fit.
Stop eating pies.
Go to gym.
So that's Dan Evans. Look, I mean, I don't know. So I'm looking forward to him coming back because I love watching him play tennis. That comes with caveats. I'm, you know, desperately disappointed in him and all of that. But he's a joy to watch play tennis.
I was going to say, I mean, yes, I mean, I ultimately feel the same. I enjoy watching him play tennis as a person. I like him, but you know, let's not forget what he did, and it is a problem, and he needs to work his way back the hard way.
And you haven't missed him giving you a hard time about West Brom, have you, on Twitter?
Particularly not this
season. An unintended
season.
Excellent consequence of his social media amnesty is that...
Oh, there have been plenty of other people making up for it, I'll tell you. I've been getting it from all
Dan,
angles.
Worry not. David is getting a hard time for the... Would poor run of form be the world's biggest understatement?
You're being generous.
I'm being generous, yeah. Absolute mid-season collapse of West Bromwich Albion.
All right.
On and off the pitch. Okay, then. David's going to go and weep into his latte, which leaves me only to tell you that David and I, will be back next week. David and Marin Cilic will be back sooner than that with our tennis podcast extra. It really is a good interview. As we explained earlier in the pod, Cilic is really punchy on the Davis Cup. So if you're interested in that whole topic of debate, and it is going to be around in tennis for a long time, check out what Marin Cilic has to say about it and other things. Lovely chat, Marin. And then Dave and I will be back next week, next Monday, with more tennis-based chat. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport and with La Manga of Catherine's forehand fame. Of course, also with Melanie Bowes, with Triple S, and with TennisBalls.com, our three executive producers, and with Charlie the Ferret, new owner of Ferret Couture.
Yeah, he's got the outfit. He is pumped. He has got a little tennis racket all of his own. He's got a little tennis podcast t-shirt that he's been wearing. And he's got a sleeping bag.
This is courtesy of a collaboration between David's fantastically talented wife, Gorana, and ferretcouture.co.uk,
yeah,
which is a thing.
It's a thing, and it's kitted him out. He's raring to go.
I think that sort of effort, David, is worthy of you perhaps stumping up the cash for some kind of billboard.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.